More broad. Good morning, welcome again with previous witnesses. You've read your evidence, so you do not need to read it to us or read paragraphs from it or even spend a lot of time summarising it, but if you could just hit the key points that you'd like us to bear in mind, please.
I think I'd just like to, the evidence is there, I'm not going to repeat it, but my approach that I took...
Sorry, just a minute, are you able to swap seats and use the microphone? I might struggle to hear you.
About 4 years ago, the Otago Regional Council, of course, went through this process, and at the time I was not working with them. I was working with them, but not for them. And the most common question that was asked when we went to public meetings was from farmers asking, who's going to monitor our water? Who's going to do this problem? And the Regional Council's approach at the time was, well, not us. And so I could see that the farmers in that region needed to have some help. So, and I knew that I could probably do this job. So I got into it at that time. My approach was that I'm not there to tell the farmer how to farm. But I do know about ecology, and I do know about water monitoring, and so it was to I would go to the farm and do some monitoring and provide that farmer with information from which they can farm their farm better, they can reduce the impacts on the streams and meet the standards and so on that they're required to do. And David, of course, doesn't have those sort of rules in front of him, but he approached me and said, well, I don't know what's going on my farm. Can you come and do some measuring and tell me what's actually happening on the farm?
Yeah.
So for instance, instead of just looking at finding out where those drains are you were mentioning and measuring them and so on, how can we go about this role with the limited amount of money he has? So it's identifying places to measure where I can get the best information and then provide that back to the farmer and give him a lead into what's going on. And then he can say, well, this is not good or this is fine, and I can then change my management to meet those needs, to actually change his impacts. And I think I'm quite happy to field any questions on all these things.
Yep.
And anything else to do with, you know, farm environment management, I guess.
Yep. We'll certainly limit our questions to the material and your evidence rather than a general discussion of those matters, but we'll see if we have questions for you. Lloyd?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In 20 of your evidence, you made mention that the coal increased along the reach, but in the absence of detectable levels of urea and low ammonium, the likely source is more likely from waterfowl rather than stock waste. Were you able to confirm that any later analysis?
I don't think anybody's ever going to be able to confirm anything on a farm in a way of environment monitoring. We're not trying to... Science can't confirm it. Science can give enough information to provide you the direction. So with an E. coli level, just taking an E. coli level, say 500 or 1,000, and saying, well, that must come from the farm, is very, very simplistic. So I want to add some other information to that to be able to determine whether this has come from the farm or some other source. And so therefore, I started using urea as a means to be able to determine, has this come from bird life? Because he said he's got a lot of birds on his farm. Or has this come from a stock? Now, birds crap, for the want of a word, uric acid, and mammals, ourselves, stock and so on, produce urea. So if I get a detection of urea, that tends to direct me to this is probably a problem from a stock, not necessarily the birds. The problem is, in fact, every farm or every E. coli measure will come from a number of different places, but we want to know is David or any other farmer actually having the impact, and in that case they can do something about it. And so the ammonium level could also go up, but just saying, oh, it's high ammonium and high E. coli must come from the farmer, well, it, in that situation, could come from the farmer, could come from black swamps, parries or any other bird life in large numbers, because the uric acid breaks down to ammonium, so does urea. So where did that ammonium come from? I'm trying to narrow the situation down to give some certainty to the farmer. Does that help?
Yes, it does. I think it raises another issue, and that is that monitoring, on-farm monitoring is actually quite a difficult job to do.
No, it's not difficult with experience. I think it's actually, it was difficult when I first started because nobody had done anything like this before. So I had to, for the first farmers I was monitoring on, they were giving me the ability to go onto their farms and learn how to do this properly. And so, for instance, to determine whether he's having that stream, any of those streams running through his property, if I do measure upstream and downstream, the testing equipment is good enough to be able to determine whether nitrogen goes up or down. If he's got both sides of the stream, he's most probably having the impact. So if nitrogen goes up, there's only one place he can probably point it. The only other alternative is coming from groundwater from some other source further afield, which is breaking into that stream at that point. He's likely to have a line of springs, maybe, indicating that is an issue. But for the vast majority of people, within a few hundred metres, I can determine whether they're having an impact, whether they're having nothing, or whether actually they're improving the water quality. For instance, the stream that runs out of his drainage system and runs through a 300 metre long open weeded channel, well, I can measure, and I put the graphs in, and show that I can measure along that 300 metres and show that the turbidity, for instance, drops from not being acceptable to being drinking water standard. And the other nutrients and so on will also drop down, E. coli die off, and it's a very successful outcome. So placing the sites and testing with good equipment means that you can get good information.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I was going to ask you about the open weeded or ditch referred to here in paragraph 32. Yep. So what are the characteristics of open weeded ditch like as it works?
That particular channel could well be called a stream, probably. It depends on what grades you. So it's a deep channel, a couple of metres into the ground. It's 2 or 3 metres wide at the base, and it's got something that looks a bit like a stream running through it. And the large wheat beds, there's trash from previous willows in it. But other weeded channels can be small channels, only less than a metre wide, totally full of buttercup and monkey must and other types of things. The water flowing through has the opportunity for the nutrients to be taken up in those plants, sediment to be settled to the bottom, and finally the water running out is in a very good order or heading in that direction.
Yeah, just briefly, your written evidence, you make a strong case for monitoring water quality. Would you proffer any opinion as to why that's not a widely practiced habit with farmers? Is it the availability of the IP, the cost of the IP, the motivation of the individual landholder, or any other reason that you might like to offer an opinion on?
Some and all of those in different situations. I think the technology is, which means that ecologists like me can buy from Merck or Huck or the other specialist providers the technology to be able to do the water testing ourselves. That's new, relatively new. In the past, the water had to go to a lab, somebody, a chemistry major had to do the monitoring. Of course, they didn't understand what they were monitoring. Also, we're monitoring, you get your bottle of water, you know exactly where it come from. You do the test, you know what you might expect, you get to be really hands-on. So the equipment hasn't really been available. I could do it out of the back tray of the ute. The equipment is mobile. You know, it's laptop-sized gear. But doesn't need a full-on lab. But it's still very, very precise. The skilled people haven't really been around either. And then the farmers haven't even needed it. Nobody was asking the farmers to count how many E. coli they had in the water or what their nitrogen was. They were given the do this, build a fence here, put a riparian zone there, and you'll be right. Now, they're not right. It's clearly across the country they're not right. And so some farmers are saying, well, we'd better find out what's going on. But so it's a new movement, really.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Yes, on a similar vein, you'll probably be aware that most nitrate is lost during flushing events in the autumn and that phosphorus is lost through overland flow during high rainfall events. Can you explain why you didn't take samples at these times?
It comes down to really... it would be nice to be able to do one sample every month, one every week, one every, highly regular sort of situation. We know, you just explained it, we know these things. but a farmer's only going to feasibly do monitoring once, twice, three times a year. If David chose to do it three times, I would choose early season, late season, and something during the winter. However, if he's only going to do it twice, we're going to do it either early season or late season, or that sort of time, because that's when the big impacts are happening. That's when the stock of full-on grazing and the farming activity is going on. That's when the nicer weather is available and people are out using the streams. That's when the river flows are lower and so the impacts are likely to be higher. So that's when we would monitor. I have monitored in the winter when farmers have wanted me to do it, and yes, there can be at times high E. coli or high nutrient or high turbidity, but on other occasions no. It depends on how well the farmer manages his farm during that time. So I've had both situations. I've had farms where they've been strip grazing to the mud, but he's provided a large enough riparian zone that those nutrients and turbidity have been exceedingly good. And yet on other occasions it's been not good at other places. So I get to see it all, but every farmer's only going to need to monitor so much. We do a warrant of fitness twice or once a year on our car and we assume it's right for the rest of the year. We know it's right because we manage our car. And a farmer can do his monitoring the same way. Once or twice a year, get a measure and then manage his farm accordingly.
Thank you. Dr. Broad, I don't have any questions for you, but I'd like you to do a bit of homework for us.
Yep.
I noticed in your paragraph 12, you've used the Otago Regional Council water plan limits in terms of the graphs that you've provided. It would be helpful for us if you were to redo those graphs using the Appendix E water quality standards that are relevant to Southland where applicable. And so could you please just do that?
Appendix E.
Yeah, there's no huge rush on that, but it'd be interesting for us to see those graphs reproduced with proposed water and land plan Appendix E standards used instead of the Otago standards, which aren't relevant in this region. And just sometime in the next 3 or 4 weeks, there's no huge rush for that. And if you could just provide that to our administration staff, that'd be great. Thank you. All right, next witness.
Thank you,